Okay, so have you ever I don't know, tried to find one specific file on your computer, but it's, buried under a mountain of other stuff?
Oh, yeah, totally. Or like when you have a ton of tabs open
Yeah.
and you're trying to find that one.
Exactly. It's like finding a needle in a haystack. And it turns out there's a whole area of computer science dedicated to solving this exact problem: search algorithms.
Yeah, these algorithms are the engines behind so much of what we do online. Every time you use a search engine or even just scroll through your social media feed, these algorithms are hard at work.
It's pretty amazing when you think about it. So for this deep dive, we're going to unpack some of the key concepts behind these search algorithms, and we're lucky to have an expert here to guide us.
Happy to be here.
So let's start with the basics. What exactly is a search algorithm?
Well, at its core, a search algorithm is simply a set of instructions for finding a specific piece of information within a larger set of data. Think of it like looking for a word in a dictionary.
Okay, that makes sense. But I'm guessing it's not always as simple as flipping through pages.
You're right. There are actually many different types of search algorithms, each with its own strengths and weaknesses.
Our source material, searching-and-sorting.pdf, focuses on two main types: linear search and binary search. Let's start with linear search. That sounds, well, pretty linear.
It is. It's the most straightforward approach. You basically check each item in the data set one by one until you find what you're looking for.
Okay, so it's like checking every single book on a shelf until you find the one you want.
Exactly.
Seems simple enough, but I can see how that would get pretty time-consuming if you have a huge data set.
You're absolutely right. And that's where binary search comes in. It's a much faster approach, but it has a catch.
Oh, what's the catch?
Binary search only works if the data is already sorted in a specific order.
So it's like searching for a word in a dictionary.
Yeah.
You wouldn't just flip through pages randomly, right?
Exactly. You'd use the alphabetical order to quickly zero in on the right page. Binary search does the same thing, but with numbers or other types of data.
Okay, so it's using the order of the data to speed up the search. But how does that actually work?
Well, imagine you're looking for the number 19 in this sorted array of numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12, 13, 15, 16, 18, 19, 20, 22.
Okay, I see it.
Instead of checking each number one by one, binary search starts by looking at the middle element, which in this case is 10.
And since 19 is greater than 10, you immediately know that you could ignore the entire left half of the array.
Right. You've just cut your search space in half with a single comparison, and you keep repeating that process, narrowing down the search area by half with each step.
Wow, that's pretty efficient. So it's like a process of elimination, but much, much faster than linear search.
Precisely. And this efficiency becomes even more apparent when you're dealing with massive data sets.
Okay, so binary search sounds like a clear winner here. But I'm also realizing something, because it only works if the data is already sorted.
That's a key point, and it brings us to a crucial concept in computer science: time complexity.
Time complexity. Okay. So is this where things get really technical?
Not really. It's a way to measure how the efficiency of an algorithm changes as the size of the data grows.
Okay. So if you have a really, really large data set, some algorithms might slow down to a crawl while others can still zip right through it.
That's the gist of it, yeah.
So how do we measure this time complexity? What are we looking at?
Well, we often use something called big O notation to express it. It helps us compare the efficiency of algorithms in a standardized way.
Big O notation. Okay, so how does that work in practice? Can you give me an example?
Sure. Let's take our two contenders, linear search and binary search. Linear search has a time complexity of O(n), which means that the time it takes grows directly with the number of items in the data set.
So if I'm looking for a file, and I have 100 files, it might take 100 steps. But if I have 1 million files.
It could take up to 1 million steps. You got it.
Okay, so that's why it can be slow for those giant data sets. What about binary search? How does its time complexity compare?
Binary search is where things get impressive. It has a time complexity of O log n, which means it can handle those huge data sets much more efficiently.
O log n. Okay, so is that way better than O gon? I'm not great with logarithmic stuff.
Don't worry about the math too much for now. The important thing is that O log n signifies much slower growth in execution time compared to O n as the data set size increases.
So with binary search, even if I have 1 million files, it won't take 1 million steps to find what I'm looking for.
Exactly. It might only take, say, 20 steps, even with that million item data set.
Wow, 20 steps versus 1 million, that's a huge difference. So O-log n is definitely a good thing.
It is, especially when you're dealing with large amounts of data. It's all about understanding how algorithms scale.
This is fascinating stuff, honestly. I mean, I use search engines every day, but I never really thought about what was going on behind the scenes.
Most people don't, but these algorithms are working hard to make our digital lives smoother and more efficient.
Absolutely. But we've sort of glossed over something pretty important here. Binary search, the superstar of efficiency, only works on sorted data.
Right,
The
you're right. And that brings us to another essential aspect of data manipulation sorting algorithms.
Right, because you need to get the data organized in the first place before you can use these fancy search algorithms. It's like you can't find a book on a shelf if the books are all out of order.
Exactly. Sorting algorithms are what bring order to the chaos, making it possible for search algorithms to do their thing effectively.
So they're kind of like the unsung heroes, laying the groundwork for those super fast searches. I'm ready to meet these heroes. What kind of sorting algorithms are we talking about?
Well, our source starts us off with a classic bubble sort. It's a simple algorithm that helps illustrate the fundamental concepts of sorting.
Bubble sort, it sounds kind of cute, actually. How does it work?
Picture a column of bubbles, all different sizes. The largest bubbles naturally rise to the top, right? Bubble sort works in a similar way, repeatedly comparing adjacent elements in a list and swapping them if they're in the wrong order.
So it's like those larger elements are slowly bubbling up to their correct positions.
Exactly. Our source gives a nice example using this array: 40, 50, 30, 20, 10.
Let me see if I get this. So we start by comparing 40 and 50. They're
Yep.
in the right order, so we move on. Then we compare 50 and 30. They're out of order, so we swap them.
Perfect, you're getting it. And you just keep repeating those comparisons and swaps, gradually moving through the list until everything is sorted.
Okay, it seems pretty straightforward. Are there any downsides to bubble sort? Because I feel like there's always a catch, right?
You're right, there is a catch. Bubble sort is easy to understand and implement, but it's not the most efficient method, especially when dealing with large data sets.
Ah, so we're back to time complexity again.
You got it. Bubble sort has a time complexity of ON2, which, as we discussed, can be quite slow as the data set grows.
Oh, and two, right? So if the data set gets 10 times bigger, bubble sort might take 100 times longer to sort it.
Exactly. So while it's a great starting point for learning about sorting, it's not always the most practical choice for real-world applications with massive data sets.
So it's like a good learning tool, but maybe not the best choice for like sorting a million online shopping results. What are some other sorting methods out there?
That's where things get even more interesting. Our source highlights a few other algorithms, each with its own approach to bringing order to data.
Okay, so we've got bubble sort, which is like the friendly introduction to sorting, but not always the most efficient. What other sorting algorithms are out there?
Well, our source mentions selection sort, which is a bit more deliberate. Instead of swapping elements multiple times like bubble sort, selection sort scans the entire list and picks out the smallest element, placing it at the beginning. Then it does the same thing for the rest of the list.
So it's like hand-picking the smallest element each time and building the sorted list from the ground up.
That's a great way to put it. And then we have insertion sort, which is similar to how we arrange playing cards. You have one card, and you insert it into its correct position within the already sorted cards. It's actually very efficient if the data is already partially sorted.
Oh, I like that analogy. It's like visually sorting as you go. So we've got these different approaches, but is there a sort of gold standard algorithm when it comes to pure speed, especially for huge data sets?
For that, we have quicksort, and it lives up to its name. Remember how binary search used that divide and conquer strategy? Well, quicksort uses a similar approach, but for sorting.
Divide and conquer for sorting. Tell me more.
So quicksort starts by choosing one element from the list called a pivot. Then it rearranges all the other elements so that everything smaller than the pivot is on one side and everything larger is on the other.
So it's like dividing the data into two groups based on this pivot.
Exactly. We've now divided the problem in half. Then we just apply the same process to those two smaller groups. Keep doing that, and boom, the entire list is sorted.
So it's breaking down the problem into smaller, more manageable chunks. That's clever. Our source also mentioned radix sort, and it sounds like it works a bit differently. What's the deal with that one?
Radix sort is interesting because it doesn't compare the elements directly. Instead, it focuses on sorting individual digits of the numbers within the list.
Wait, so instead of comparing entire numbers, it's comparing like the tens digit, then the hundreds digit.
Exactly. Imagine sorting a list of numbers by the units digit first, then the tens digit, and so on. It's really efficient when you're working with fixed length data, like phone numbers or ID codes.
Though it's like having different specialized tools for different sorting jobs. It's amazing how much thought goes into these seemingly simple tasks. It really makes you appreciate how complex these things are under the hood.
It's a whole world of algorithms out there, each one fine-tuned for specific tasks. And what's even more fascinating is that these concepts aren't limited to computer science.
Oh, I totally agree. It's like, once you understand these sorting and searching algorithms, you start to see them everywhere in life. So as we wrap up our deep dive into algorithms, what's the big takeaway for our listeners?
I think the key is understanding that there are many ways to solve a problem, and the most efficient solution isn't always the most obvious one.
It's about having the right tools for the job, whether we're writing code or just trying to organize our lives.
Exactly. And sometimes the simplest solutions, like that binary search dividing the problem in half with each step, are the most elegant and efficient.
Well said. It's been an awesome journey into the world of algorithms, and hopefully our listeners will walk away with a newfound appreciation for the ingenuity that powers so much of what we do, from searching the web to simply sorting a list. Thanks for joining us.